What I'd like to do this morning is to reawaken in us an appreciation for a miracle that we acknowledge, but we don't celebrate nearly often enough. And to begin the story, I want to take you back almost 25 years ago when I was at my mother's bedside in Jefferson Hospital in Philadelphia when she was going through a prolonged illness. And I was sitting there with my family day after day, and a friend of mine came and he said, "You know, it's Memorial Day today. I want to take you somewhere." She took me out of the hospital and we walked just a couple blocks away to a small park in downtown Philadelphia. And there was a statue that I'm sure I had passed before, but never really noticed. And it said on it, "This is the tomb of the unknown soldier from the Revolutionary War." And what struck me was that it was Memorial Day. This was a monument to the tomb of the unknown soldier of the war that founded the United States of America. And no one else was there. It was just the two of us standing before this anonymous, long-dead soldier who had, in some very direct way, given his life so that we could stand there. I remembered him this week, even though I never did and never will know his name. When I went from the rabbinical convention that Rabbi Guzik mentioned earlier, down to Washington to be part of the reception for Jewish Heritage Month, which, it may have escaped your notice, is May. I don't know why, maybe the Omer, maybe Israel Independence Day, maybe Shavuot, but Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who is an important and active official from Florida in the House, lobbied the United States to make this Jewish Heritage Month, and in these waning days, this is your month. What happened was that outside Washington, outside the White House rather, gathered on this blazing hot Washington day, there were some 150 Jews melting away, waiting to go inside when we were ushered and triple screened, and we went into the White House, which is an experience I know that some of you have had, and that I had had once before under very different circumstances in a previous administration, the Bush administration, when they opened the Anne Frank exhibit at the Holocaust Museum. A bunch of us also, at that time almost all rabbis, were invited to the White House for a dinner. But this was Jewish Heritage Month, so it wasn't only rabbis, though there was a smattering of rabbis as well. There were athletes and writers and musicians and businessmen and businesswomen, all of whom represented the cross-section of Jewish achievement in America. And we all got ushered into the reception, the first part of which, of course, is to walk through some of the halls of the White House. To walk through the halls of the White House is, first of all, to be reminded of the miracle. Because there are the portraits of the presidents, the first ladies, the founders of our nation, going all the way back to the beginning. There's the seal of the presidency of the United States on everything from the carpets to the hand towels in the bathroom. It's quite astonishing and overwhelming to realize where you are and what the history of this place is, since by a certain reckoning, depending on how you count it, the United States is now the oldest continuous democracy in the world. But even were that not so, We occupy a unique position in the history of the world, and to be there is to be reminded of that. And as you go from room to room, and you see not only all the various paraphernalia and mementos and collections of leather-bound books that remind you that you are in no ordinary place, but you see all the others, Jews and some non-Jews, who are in this place for this reception, you are reminded that this transcends politics and brings you back to the miracle. So here's the miracle. It is not true that Jews have not attained positions of power in previous lands throughout our history. We have. But it was always power on sufferance, never by right. It could be revoked in an instant, and often was. One of the great Jewish commentators of the Middle Ages, Don Yitzchak Abravanel, was the treasurer to Ferdinand and Isabella. He had reached the pinnacle of society in Spain until in 1492, he was exiled along with all of his compatriots. In fact, not only was Abravanel exiled, but before he was exiled, there was a plot that he discovered in time to kidnap his grandson in an attempt to make him stay and force him to convert and continue to serve as the treasurer for Ferdinand and Isabella. But instead, he went into exile with his people because, as important as he was a Jew. And Jews were there by sufferance, not by right. A few months ago, at the American Jewish Committee, I had a dialogue with Anthony Julius, who has just completed his history of anti-Semitism in England called Trials of the Diaspora. And one of the things that he points out is it is true that there were few anti-Semitic incidents in England after the Middle Ages and until the modern age than in almost any country, but that's only because in the high Middle Ages, England kicked out all of the Jews. The blood libel started in England. The idea that Jews bake the blood of Christian children into their matzoth in England, of all places. And even after the Jews were kicked out, hatred didn't end because, you see, you don't need Jews to have anti-Semitism. It can flourish in the absence of Jews. And when they came back under Cromwell, and this is part of Julius's point, it didn't end. And there we were in the White House. Religious Jews, non-religious Jews. There were kippots and beards and long black coats. And there were elegant dresses and suits. And even one or two people who didn't get the memo and showed up in jeans. And we felt like guests because of the house, but not because we were Jews. And I realized again that the most blessed thing that ever happened to me was that my great-grandparents left Russia and Poland and Lithuania and braved a difficult and perilous journey on the sea to come to the United States of America. And there we sat, and for a moment, after all the discussions, the politics fell away. Because whoever is resident in the White House is a temporary resident. And whether you liked the last resident, or this one, or the next one, just hang around and it will change. But the symbols And the meaning of the place, that endures. And so people gathered around and we milled around, and I can give you, if you want more details of who was there and what they did, I wrote an article for Huffington Post you can find through my Facebook page or on Huffington Post, or it'll be in next week's Jewish Journal and it'll give you more details. But everybody was trying to see everybody else except for the legendary basketball player Dolph Schayes and his son, who could see everyone just by standing there. The rest of us had to look. And everybody was thrilled, as the president acknowledged in his remarks, from one person in particular. He began his remarks by saying, "It's amazing to have this collection of rabbinical scholars and entrepreneurs and musicians and poets and Sandy Koufax." Because Sandy Koufax is the epical hero of anyone who grew up in the last half century in America, not only because he may have been the greatest pitcher ever to play the game, but especially because one year in the World Series he refused to pitch on Yom Kippur. And that made him forever after a hero to every Jewish sports fan in America, and there he was. And the president went on to say, "Sandy Koufax and I have a lot in common. We're both lefties. He can't pitch on Yom Kippur, and I can't pitch." But what was more important than the event or the charm or the surroundings or the deep divisions and arguments that people had before and after, since there are deep divisions and arguments, as you all know, not only among the Jewish community, but the Jewish community and the administration and what should be done, what has been done, but what transcended all of that, was we sat there, I sat down, I saw on the row people whom I knew and some people whom I didn't know. I looked behind me and there was sitting Robert Pinsky, and I don't know how many of the people there recognized Robert Pinsky, but I certainly did. He's the former Poet Laureate of the United States. And then the world's first African-American female rabbi got up and read the poem that is enshrined on the Statue of Liberty, The New Colossus, written by a female Jewish poet, Emma Goldman. "Give me your tired, your hungry, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free."
Lazarus.
What? Lazarus. Yes, I'm sorry. Emma Lazarus. Forgive me. Thank you. And everybody was hushed for a moment while they heard her read, and then a singer whom you may know, since you know Emma Lazarus, but I didn't, named Regina Spektor, who apparently came to the United States at age 9 from Russia, sang a couple of songs, and that was it. And then we all dispersed. But in the course of it, among other things, we saw Supreme Court justices walk in, two of them Jewish, as well as a nominee, also Jewish. And the president said, I want you to know that Rahm Emanuel wanted to be here, but he's in Israel celebrating the bar mitzvah of his son. And I thought, what can it possibly mean to live in a world in which the most powerful man in the world says, "My primary aide is not here because he's in the state of Israel, celebrating the bar mitzvah of his son"? And I thought back immediately to that unknown soldier and to the fact that it is Memorial Day on Monday. And I realized that we were witnesses to an extraordinary miracle, something that none of our ancestors could possibly have imagined, could ever have dreamed. Because we weren't there by sufferance, we were there by right. Because no one could turn around tomorrow, as did Ferdinand and Isabella, and say, you go. Or as did Cromwell and say, okay, you can come back. Because that seal was our seal too. Because the public officials who were there were elected without their ethnicity or their religion being the central factor. Because everyone knew that there were parts of our community that adored this president and parts of our community that were at great odds with this president, and that was okay because it was America. And you can feel about him and say about him whatever you want, and it may be wise or unwise. It may be true or untrue, but you can do it because it's America. And whatever journey you took, whether it was a journey of your ancestors on ship or your own journey by plane, to make it to these shores, once you have done so, once you have become a citizen, you belong there too. The fact that the symbol of our country, of its welcoming, contains lines by a Jewish poet. The fact that on the Liberty Bell are words from our Bible. The fact that as I walked out of the White House, marveling at the experience that we had all shared together, I came upon a small group who were talking about the American Jewish History Museum that's about to open in Philadelphia in November. And you know where that museum is located? In Independence Mall. Right where the Constitution was written. Right where the Liberty Bell stands, they build the American Jewish History Museum. It reminded me of the enormity of the miracle. How astonishing it is historically that we were all there. That we are all here. That you can go out and say whatever you want to whomever you want and risk nothing more than a punch in the nose. So I got on the plane, and as I was sitting there, a bunch of kids, 13, 14, 15 years old, walked by me wearing kippot. And since I was wearing a kippah too, I said to them, so where are you guys from? And they said, oh, we're from Maimonides in Los Angeles. And I thought, it's a miracle. Where else in the world could children that age, other than the state of Israel, walk so unselfconsciously on a plane? And then I went back to Independence Mall in my mind, and that day. We owe this country an almost unpayable debt. Not for what it has done, but for what it is. And yet, I felt as I looked around me at the White House, at poets, at scientists, at teachers, at rabbis, at musicians, at singers, at writers, at political commentators, at television personalities, I felt like, you know what? We have given America a fairly good return for the gift that it has given us. This country has done right by the Jewish people. And we have done right by America. It's not that there have never been problems, there's never been prejudice, there's never been discrimination, there's never been anger, there has. No place is perfect. And God knows the Jewish community has not always been perfect. But boy, we have gotten gold and given gold back. And that's when I realized, as powerfully as I ever have, when I saw those kids walk on that plane, that they may not have known it a few centuries ago, but when that Liberty Bell first chimed, it was playing our song. Long may it play. And on this Memorial Day, and on this Shabbat, God bless the Jewish people, God bless the state of Israel, and God bless America. Shabbat Shalom.